This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutin, with me, Tan Chung Han and Melissa Idris. And the morning run's just begun. It's taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock this morning with a range of interviews, news and analysis. It's World Press Freedom Day, believe it or not. Keeping POW in check is the theme.
Well, happy World Press Freedom Day. Does anyone celebrate that? I mean, it's not like it's a celebration, but it is something we should be mindful of. And I think that the theme this year is apt for Malaysia as we head into the general elections. The media has a role to keep power in check, right? To be a check and balance for those in power.
Right. And I guess given the dynamics in the local industry, shall we put it, the local media landscape, you would think that that is a bit more of an uphill challenge compared to other economies where the press are perceived to have a lot more freedom.
A bit of the sniffles, is it, Han, this morning?
A little bit.
So we're going to be hearing you strain a little bit, maybe cough a little bit. Okay.
I'm just doing this just to elicit some sympathy.
Okay. He's getting the sympathy vote.
Yes. No, who's not getting much sympathy is Cambridge Analytica. Its news broke that it's closing after that data harvesting scandal. Data Analytica, needless to say, denies any wrongdoing, but it says that the negative media coverage has left it with no clients and mounting legal fees. So it's actually, I think, going into insolvency proceedings.
Well, this makes me happy. I'm sorry. I'm happy that they're shutting down. I'm happy that clients of Cambridge Analytica voted with their pockets and said, you know, we're going to walk out the door simply because of the controversy or the allegations of how they obtained the personal data of the clients that for potential clients.
Right. I mean, so a few weeks ago, you've got Facebook shutting them out from their platform. And then just a couple of days ago, you had Twitter announcing that they are doing the same as well. And so with that, now we've got this news that Cambridge Analytica is going to shut down. But, you know, for me personally, because on my Facebook account, I got that notification that my personal data on Facebook had actually been exposed to this whole saga here.
So you're personally affected by this?
Yeah, and despite me not taking that stupid quiz or whatever it was, but I guess one of my friends did, but I got that notification. But is it kind of weird that I was rather apathetic about it?
Well, you know, what concerns me about this is that they may be shutting the physical business, right, the building, the business of Cambridge Analytica, but that doesn't mean the business model goes away.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it
that's
could
exactly
mushroom,
what I'm thinking.
It could mushroom up in some other incarnation. So whether we have actually resolved the issue, the crux of the matter is another question.
Also in the news, Malaysia's former junior world champions in badminton, Zulfadli Zulkifli and Tan Chun Siang.
I thought you were going to say Tan Chung Han.
Hey.
Were handed bans of 20 to 15 years each for betting, wagering, and irregular match results. So quite stiff penalties for these two young men. That's news coming out just yesterday.
Yeah, and apparently some of these tournaments that involve these match fixing, allegedly, date back to 2013. So it's been apparently going on for a while now. And I guess, you know, once again, trying to protect the integrity of the game, right? You know, as a sports fan, it is disconcerting to see these kinds of episodes happen, but at the same time, it needs to happen. Eh?
Is it like a reflection of the Malaysian? I mean, I feel saddened to hear this because I'm worried that it could taint the rest of the sporting. Badminton specifically.
Well, I believe the two individuals are not, in fact, members of the Badminton Federation. There's also this other thing, talking about keeping your brand clean. Starbucks was involved some weeks ago in that race profiling case. Now, that's been settled in a very interesting way. The two men who were arrested, and they were African Americans in a cafe, they have settled for $1. But from the city, but also a promise of a $200,000 grant for an entrepreneurship program.
So that $1 symbolic, is it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's not like they settled for a dollar, right? It's more symbolic, isn't it?
Yeah. And you know what's really important is that those two men were in Starbucks to discuss a real estate deal. So they were actually entrepreneurs. Well, okay. We also have news because the petrol prices will remain constant until the 9th of May, which is polling day. It's about less than a week now from today. We'll be back with a look at dresses and how they can cause such a kerfuffle. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Van Morrison with Jackie Wilson Said. I'm Sharad Kutin, with me, Tan Cheng Han and Melissa Idris. And you're with The Morning Run. We're taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock in the morning. Remember, you can always be part of this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. If you want to remain anonymous, don't put your name. But if you don't, if you want a bit of a shout out, just put your name there, 018-789-8899. Now, we turn our attention to Mormon country in the United States, Salt Lake City, where a little cultural skirmish is ongoing over a cheongsam. That's right, a cheongsam. You think that would not be a reason to have a fight, but apparently some young American girl wore a cheongsam, and somebody said, well, my culture is not your prom dress. Thank you very much. You can imagine who's saying these things.
Well, that was that's quite stinging, don't you think? My culture, not your prom dress. Accusing the young lady of cultural appropriation. I guess the idea is to kind of understand what exactly cultural appropriation really is. Here, it's defined as the adoption of minority cultures, especially by dominant cultures. But really, I mean, when you guys read the story, did you feel that it was deserving of the backlash that it got on social media? I mean, do you consider this cultural appropriation?
Well, I don't think so. And I think it'd be quite attractive for these women over there to be wearing the cheongsam.
You mean like a tight red cheongsam?
Or any cheongsam. And I think, look, because
it is very flattering to the figure.
It is. Why? Because you're speaking from experience there, buddy.
No, I'm not wearing my cheongsam myself.
It's unforgiving to your figure. All right.
What happened to the idea about imitation is the best form of flattery, right? So if, you know, they are comfortable wearing it, and I think, you know, more power to them, right?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that, if you look at the story, is that there's a snapshot of all these young women also in cheongsams, and they're all kind of in this half squat and with their hands pressed together in a kind of, you know, Thai Y, you know, what Indians might call it. And yes, it's in the picture, right?
But they're not wearing cheongsams. The rest of them are not wearing prom dresses.
Okay, so they're all in that little squat, and the boys are doing something really bizarre. I'm not quite sure what that is.
A gang sign or something.
But, you know, it reminds you of the way in which, say, the East was depicted in the West. If you think of, say, The Mikado, the really wonderful musical by Gilbert and Sullivan from the late, 19th century, you know, look, Chinese culture, Japanese culture has been a source of fascination for the West for the longest time, you know, and it's there in the popular culture as well.
Right. I think, you know, looking at all these instances of alleged cultural misappropriation, right, it comes from a place of insecurity. So it's usually the majority race that appropriates or allegedly appropriates, you know, some form of the minority's culture, right?
But do you think this is there's an American context here that we're not understanding? Because, you know, allegations of cultural appropriation often come from America. And I think it's because there is a dominant race that often that has cultural appropriation of a minority race, right?
Yeah.
Here in I think in Asia, which is a huge melting pot, we borrow from each other's culture all the time.
Yeah. I recall a school performance I did way back in the day where I performed on stage in front of the whole school wearing a baju Melayu. And the Malay teachers loved it, you know, like, yeah, no, budak ni, no, comel sangat, all that, right? But then when you bring it to the American context, these accusations are not new. You've got, say, Eminem saying, you know, oh, he has misappropriated black music, hip-hop, you know, even Macklemore, etc. So it's, it's a whole different context over there.
Yeah, but the question, of course, is, I mean, just reflecting on their anxieties, right? So the anxiety of minorities about cultural appropriation aside, what does it do for that culture? If you think of the melting pot idea that, Melissa, you brought up, is in fact what we used to describe America as. America was melting pot, right? right? I mean, and it is in some ways still a melting pot culture. But because of that diversity, there's also a sense of possessiveness and, you know, a propriety. So it's like, this is mine and that's yours, right. You know?
Is it like us with our food? You know, nasi lemak is Malaysian and no one else can take it.
Fighting words there, Mel. Be careful now. Look, I think the idea over there is that it becomes something flippant. I think that's the fear, right? You know, you just put cornrows there in your hair just because, you know, you just put on that outfit just because. Where else in, say, its original context or in original cultural context, it perhaps has more historical and cultural significance?
It's also a question, I think, of social media, because, look, honestly, it's a prom dress. This was not some major theatrical or artistic work that was making grand claims about understanding Chinese culture and the history of Chinese, you know, sartorial sensibilities and the aesthetics behind it. This was simply a young girl wearing a dress that she thought would look great on prom night. But because it's on social media, it can garner the kind of reaction. So somebody puts cultural appropriation and 290,000 people say, yeah, you know, or retweet
well,
that.
Well, but I guess the funny thing is that people were comparing how many likes or retweets she got in her original post versus how many likes and retweets that guy who claimed my culture, not your prom dress. So they were comparing, oh, the number of, like, she got more. That means people side with her more. And it's become a bit of a farce on social media, to be completely honest.
And I think there's a rather timely discussion given that it is World Press Freedom Day. Now, I'm not going to equate just good old Twitter with the press per se, but, you know, it's the idea of when you send this message out and having, you know, being open to the public's reaction, you know, is it somewhat skewed in today's digital age, right?
Yeah, you know, you watch Mad Men, the television series, mm-hmm. about, you know, if you remember, one of the main shareholders in the company, the ad company, has his whole office decked out in Japanese. You know, it's all Japanese styling, and he makes people take their shoes off. You remember that character?
Is that cultural appropriation, you reckon?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you could accuse him of that, but so what, right? This is something for you to discuss. Tell us what you think. You can tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Next, we'll come back to the question of political debate. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Elton John and I'm Still Standing. I'm Sharad Kutan. With me, Tan Chung Han and Melissa Idris. We're all still standing. Well, I am standing.
Barely.
And Han and Melissa are actually seated. But this is radio, not television. So imagine what you would like. We can have us standing on one foot. You could have us, you know,
hopping and saying stuff.
Or, you know, swinging from the terraces, whatever you like. Okay. Tell us what you'd like us to be doing in the studio. Tweet us at BFM Radio. WhatsApp us is 018-789-8899. Now, in the run-up to GE 14, which is coming up in less than a week, there's been quite a bit of to and fro in terms of challenges from one candidate to the other. One of them is to debate, to come and have a debate. Now, we don't see very much of debate in Malaysia. In some countries, it's part and parcel of the political culture. Now, interestingly enough, the incumbent for the Muar parliamentary seat, Razali Ibrahim, has accepted a debate challenge by the Bersatu/PKR candidate Syed Saddiq Syed Abdul Rahman. And that's going to be interesting because it'd be one of the rare occasions that we hear a debate.
And not only is it a rare occasion, Sharad, I don't think I've had one where you have two candidates standing for the same seat saying, okay, let's set up a political debate where both of us can actually lay out what it is that we want to achieve, what we want voters to know. And I really love this idea, and I don't understand why it's not the norm in Malaysian political culture, because as a voter, this is the most direct form of information that I can get. I can hear two people going head-to-head telling me this side says this and that side says that, and then I can make an informed decision, right?
Right. So, in principle, I totally agree 100%. Like, we need to have these debates more often than not, right? And I guess this debate between Syed Saddiq and also Razali Ibrahim, that is a step in the right direction. But I think the caution here is baby steps. Here's why. Because, you know, I have attended a couple couple of dramas this past weekend, about to, going to try and do some more this coming weekend. And I think it's about the response as well, the understanding where the crowd, whether or not the crowd is ready for such debates or not. Now, because you know, attending a debate assumes some level of civil norms, you know,
really?
That you're able to take them on. I'll give you an example. So this past weekend, I attended this drama, right? Arul Kanda was there. And he was getting into this hearty discussion with an individual, right? And the crowd was getting riled up. Okay, so the home crowd was on the BN, this was a BN drama. The home crowd was on the BN side, and they were getting upset over this individual.
Okay,
right?
Okay, over the questions.
See, yeah.
But you see, the thing is, right? So in mature democracies, it isn't like everybody's polite and civil. In fact, you have a whole range of political expression responses, right? So if we're going to wait for the time where everything is perfect, you'll never get there. In fact, I think the idea is, and you turn to people like Alexis de Tocqueville, who's one of the major critics of, you know, the emergent American democracy. He says very clearly that in some ways, democracy is a practice. You need to practice it. That's how you develop the civility.
Sure.
You have to go through many iterations of those debates and develop a deep debating culture.
Mm. Yeah.
You know how we often talk about how politics should be more than just this kind of mudslinging. It should be about policy and the discussion about the real issues in policy, right? And yes, while that is idealistic, a debate could be the first step to that because, you know, the candidates will be forced to prepare, the candidates will be forced to lay out their manifesto and what it is they want to achieve. And, you know, at the risk of looking inferior to the other candidate, you would want to put your best foot forward. And I think this is the right step. Said Sadiq is a debater himself, isn't it? So
yeah.
I think he's been trying to, I believe it's not the first time that he's thrown this challenge out there, but I'm glad to see that the incumbent, Dato' Razali, has picked up this challenge.
Yeah, and Shirat, you know, you had you moderated a panel with Syed Sadiq and I can't remember who it is.
Zaid al-Baruddin.
Yeah, Zaid al-Baruddin
on the grill.
Yeah, you know, folks, highly encourage you guys to.
That was a good one.
Yeah, that's a great one, right? The tone was very civil. There was plenty of thoughts that put across. Now, I mean, again, in principle, I totally agree, but you know, baby steps. So I certainly 100% welcome this, but I'm somewhat cautious about the reaction.
Right.
Let me just give you another example.
Wait, hold on.
Oh, okay.
60 years of democracy. That's what we had in this country. 60 years since we've been independent. When is it that we will take these baby steps? This is a very old baby, by the way, Malaysia. It's a very old baby.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite sure why we have to wait for it. It's really outgrown its nappies.
Yeah, well,
you know? And so I do think, you know, and Melissa, the idea of the debate is not simply to lay out your position. It's actually to listen, understand the other person's position, and develop the thing. A really mature debate takes us somewhere different from the original positions that the different parties have. I mean, that is what an interesting debate will be.
Right, but then let's try and discuss the effectiveness of these debates, though. How many people actually turn up to these debates, you know, and with an open enough mindset where they actually walk away with their minds changed? I would dare assume that is the rarity rather than the norm.
Well, you know, in the US, everyone watches the presidential debates, right?
And they just yell at the TV.
They do yell at the TV. But after that, I think, you know, because it's the norm, because everyone expects the debate and everyone's watching out for it, and everyone goes through it with a kind of fine-tooth comb to see who, you know, so-called won that debate. I do think that it's not about changing people's minds, but really seeing the caliber of your candidates, right? Who is it that you want to be your elected representative?
I mean, it must be said that the Americans have honed this to a fine art with those presidential debates. The question is, who gets left out of it in the American context, right? So it's always the major parties. But it seems to me that, in fact, what we want is to proliferate debates beyond candidates to experts, experts speaking to candidates, candidates speaking to other candidates, and a whole range of permutations that might, in fact, enrich the political system. We have a WhatsApp from Ann Tan, who believes that many local politicians are not of the highest caliber, and therefore, I'm not sure if I'm reading your WhatsApp correctly, Ann, you're saying there should be no debates in
Malaysia. Well, there are no debates in Malaysia, she's saying, because, yeah. But, and we can only hope for better, can't we?
We can. Coming up, taking us, rather, to the first bulletin of the morning is Natalie Imbruglia with A Wrong Impression. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Pat Banatar with Hit Me With Your Best Shot. I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Melissa Idris and Joyce Goh. And it's the morning run. It's coming up to 40 minutes past 6 in the morning, and it's the 3rd of May. It's also World Press Freedom Day, and the theme this year, keeping power in check. Now, because power is everything in the game of GE14, it's coming up very soon. Just less than a week from now, we'll be having the ultimate contest, something that we've been waiting for several years now.
Battle for Malaysia.
And everybody in the game is trying to get something or someone on their side, right? So they can point to their past performance, or they're going to be soliciting endorsements from friends. Now, the MCA president, Dato' Sri Liao Tiong Lai, he's fighting it out in Bentong in Pahang. Now, he has enlisted the support of Lee Chong Wei, of course, who's a national sportsman. The question is, this might be great for the MCA president. Is it great for the national sportsman?
Yeah, okay. So this has divided some people, saying that, you know, Dato' Lee Chong Wei, being who he is, a national icon, a unifying force of the country, whether he should be picking sides when it comes to the political race, right? Because essentially by picking a side, he's not unifying the country anymore. He's you know, causing that gap to grow a little bit wider. On the other hand, there are those who say, well, you know, he's a private individual, he's a private citizen, he should be able to declare whatever support he wants to. We wouldn't want to be deprived of that, right? Why should we deprive him of that?
Yeah, well, I'm on the camp of he's a private individual, but it's known that he can be quite friendly to some politicians in a way. I mean, people will definitely want to bank on him and his popularity, and, you know, if they're friends with him, they'll try and do a photo op, post it. I mean,
that's a great photo op to have Lee Chong Wei by your side.
Yeah, and we know of politicians who go and attend his matches, and wives of politicians who go and attend his matches. So, you know, it's out there already.
Well, so the difference is that we understand the motivations of politicians who want to get some political capital from associating themselves, say, with a championship, with champions when they actually win those championships. But the issue really is for the sportsmen, right? So how they view themselves. And it's also somewhat like royals in this country, right? And because of that debacle we had with the Tunku Makoto of Johor, when he seemed to be suggesting that he was siding with one over the other in the contest in Johor and nationally. And that didn't win him much votes, because I say, yes, well, we respect you for what you do, but, you know, we don't want you weighing in on this, because you have to be, at the end of the day, and, you know, when he comes to power as the next Sultan of Johor, he will obviously need to be the monarch for all the rakyat, sure, regardless of their political affiliations.
So it's not like if you don't support one political party, you can opt out of supporting, you can of having him as a monarch. But the idea is, so the kind of the backlash, or so the criticism of Lee Chong Wei being there or picking a side, essentially is those who believe he has a duty as a national athlete. Whether he likes it or not, that duty really is to bring together all Malaysians. And, you know, it's been wonderful to see how Malaysians rally together at, you know, watching one of his badminton matches. I remember vividly watching him trying to win a goal and the sheer disappointment when he didn't. I remember that one match where he didn't. And the collective, I guess, misery we all felt together with strangers at a mamak shop. And like it or not, he is that unifying force. So whether he has a duty to protect it by not picking a political side, I think it, you know, according to a lot of people, that it is a noble job. So he should honour that.
Is it him or the sport badminton? You know, something I remember when I was young.
Any sport.
Yeah, Thomas Cup. I remember jumping on the bed, so excited. And there was a public holiday after that when we won. This was in the 80s, I remember. So, I mean, badminton is definitely a sport that brings us together. Food is definitely something that brings us together. Remember the crispy rendang story? And that's how that got all Malaysians together and we bandied around that. So, I'm not sure whether is it the personality or do you think it's the sport? Or in this case, a food or badminton?
Maybe all sportsmen should stay out of the political arena. Because the idea is we don't impose the same restrictions on celebrities. You know, celebrities are free to pick whichever sides they want.
Well,
to endorse.
Some people will criticize celebrities for their endorsements, but I must say that in this country, at least, as it is in any other country, you know, picking a side might actually win you contracts, right? So an endorsement of one side or the other of a political game might actually be to advantage. And I don't think Lee Chong Wei is simply an icon in his own eyes. He's probably a businessman and he's also an astute one as well.
But also the fact that it's Bentong, right? Bentong, I mean, at the last general elections, Lia Tiong Lai won by such a slim margin. So this could be what swings the vote.
Well, we'll be back with a look at that banner defacement issue. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Feist with Gatekeeper. I'm Shahad Kutin. With me, Melissa Idris and Joyce Goh. And the morning run is taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock this morning. Thank you so much for your tweets and your WhatsApp messages, Benny. Thank you so much for being with us every morning. And I'm glad you enjoyed the show. Now, yesterday we were talking about banners and some of the pushback on the actions of the Elections Commission or town councils to cut out images of Tun Dr. Mahathir where they appeared on banners because they don't comply with the very last minute rules that were imposed on political parties in terms of the images they could use. Now, that story continues because there have been some defacements of banners as well.
Yeah, so Syed Saddiq, parliamentary candidate for Mua, for the Mua seat. Well, he said, and he's a Pakatan Harapan candidate, his banner was apparently defaced. So I think someone used black spray paint and then covered defaced his face on the banner. And there's been police reports now lodged after it. So I think we're going to be seeing a lot of this. And he said so himself. He said, you know, as the campaign period progresses, we're going to be seeing a lot of this kind of behavior. And the question really is, what does it say of the political supporters or the supporters of a political party on both sides when it comes to defacing an opponent's property, right? So we've seen this on either Pakatan Harapan and Barisan Nasional supporters behaving poorly. And it just makes me think of, you know, in football, if the fans of a football team behave poorly, the team gets penalised for it. So because you love your team so much, you behave when there's an away match, when you're going to support. I think politics should be the same as a football match, where you penalise the party for the behaviour of your supporters.
I know some people who relate everything back to football. Yeah,
that's true. Don't talk about Han like that.
Well, it's not just Syed Saddiq. I think DAP Subang Jaya's candidate as well, Michelle Ng, had her photo or her banner smeared with red paint. Yeah, so far I've only known, I mean, we have Syed Saddiq and Michelle Ng. I'm not sure if there are any more out there that's been vandalized as such. But yeah, it speaks volumes of, you know, you're asking, is this because out of fear or is it just plain immaturity? What's the reason for them to do this?
Now, one of the practical problems, Melissa, I think coming out of penalizing parties for the actions of so-called supporters is that you don't know if those supporters are truly of that party. So if they were not party members but supporters, how would you attribute blame? And one of the possibilities that will come out is that the defacements could be acts of sabotage, right? So you sabotage of the other party by making it look like their supporters are actually defacing opponents' banners.
Okay, fair, so, that's a valid point.
Yeah, so I mean, for me, is okay, in the grand scheme of things, when you put Malaysia in comparative perspective with elections that happen around the world, what is a little banner defacement?
Really, Sharon?
Yeah. You know, because when you think of the kinds of violence that happens in elections across the world, this is actually quite minor. It's not something you want to encourage.
Right.
It's not something that, you know, will get anybody any kind of, you know, points. But it certainly is something that we need to put in perspective, right? This is not the same as beating people up or, you know, murder and, you know, all those things. That actually happens in other countries.
Okay, that's true. But I do think there must be something we can do to encourage the civic-mindedness of not defacing. I mean, let's play fair. Let's play by the rules. Let's not, you know, you may feel passionately in support one political party. That doesn't mean you have to sabotage the other political party's banner, throwing red paint or spraying his eyes out on the banner. Not literally, correct. So I'm just wondering what can we do and what does it say of us that we've kind of fallen into this? Because you don't see people vandalizing other road signs. I mean, to be completely honest, you know, I don't see a lot of graffiti on the walls.
Well, except Alungs. Alungs deface a lot.
That's true. Right?
But they don't need to. They're just using free. They're just real estate for them, for their advertising.
Free real estate. Let's not behave like Alungs is what I'm trying to say, right?
No, okay. Coming back to the issue of the way politicians deal with these incidents, right? And so there's criticism also of individuals like Syed Saddiq saying, "Well, you know, are you making too much of this? I mean, yes, okay, it's annoying, but really, should you be playing this card so heavily?" I'm not quite sure if he is, but in the grand scheme of things, is this too much to milk from one incident?
Yeah, I don't think he's playing it very strongly, that card very strongly, but he's just putting it out there. He's just saying that, you know, I've lodged a police report and they'll look into this. And, you know, basically he's saying that I don't think this is the first time nor will it be the last. Mm. They're expecting more as we move closer to the polls.
Which is a shame, right? Which is terrible that, you know, okay, this is not going to be, I expect a lot worse to come further down the road. I've also seen criticism of his response to say that this is the opposition's way of playing that victim mentality of, oh, look at me, my banners are getting defaced. But I can say that it's happening for both sides of the divide, right? However, what would be the correct response? How would we want to see our politicians respond to, say, their political material or campaign material being defaced?
Well, I think one of the clear things is that you need some form of documentation, right? I mean, meaning you want to put down on paper and make official all instances of electoral rule violations. I think that's fair enough. But but to go beyond that, I'm not entirely sure. And I do think that at the end of the day, we must bring some perspective and a sense of proportion to all these things that happen. And in the end, especially knowing that this strategy cuts both ways.
Yeah.
It can, in fact, play very badly for the other side if it's their scene to be, you know, acting in this fashion. Because we know that one of the issues around the ground is people feel, you know, everything's menyampai and everything's like people just over with, you know, had enough of the nonsense that goes on in Malaysian politics. And so is this good for Malaysian politicians? Well, you tell us. You can always tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Taking us to the next bulletin of the morning, the mighty, mighty Boston's with The Impression That I Get. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Joyce Goh and Melissa Idris. And the morning run continues. It's 6:30 PM in the morning. It's the 3rd of May. Remember, you can always be part of this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. Thank you, Sudip, for your WhatsApp over the banner defacement issue. You say, what side should do is to print all his next banners with his face defaced with red paint or whatever. Own it, use it.
Okay.
That's an interesting strategy. strategies to basically appropriate the attempts to deface him.
Well, it's like the cutout of Dr. Mahathir from the big billboard. Right now, every picture has the dotted line cut out, which I think is owning it.
A fascinating strategy there. Okay. Now, there are, of course, many people who are undecided when it comes to who they're going to cast their votes for. But there's some dispute over the numbers of undecided voters. According to a survey conducted by the research outfit Invoke Malaysia, there's been an increase in voters, whether Malay, Chinese or Indian, who are undecided over who to vote for in G14. Their findings show that about 50% of Malay voters surveyed in a recent poll admitted to being undecided on who to vote.
Yeah, and comparatively, the survey also found that about 66% of the Chinese community and about 47% of Indian voters felt the same way. And this is as of April 23rd. So I wonder, what are the reasons behind this? Why are they undecided?
And so many remain undecided a week to polling day, which is surprising to me because, you know, you'd think that at this point in time, people would have their minds made up.
Well, I actually have heard numbers quite the opposite, suggesting that the number of undecideds are quite small.
Yeah, I figured that. Logically, you would think that by this point in time, everyone's had enough time to decide.
And maybe the nature of the contest as well. Now, we turn our attentions to an expert insight into this. We spoke to Ben Sufian, Program Director at the independent pollster Merdeka Center. And we asked Ben if Merdeka Center is seeing similar figures.
We are seeing different numbers. And I think it deals with how the questions are asked. If we ask people to give them three choices and which party that they're going to vote for, we find that the number of people who say that they're unsure or haven't made up their minds, you know, amount to, on average, about 13 to 15% voters out there. But then if we screen them out in terms of choices for leaders and issues that propel them, we find that the numbers who really, really haven't really made up their minds to be probably around half of that, about 68% of the voters. So really, really small. So I think that most people have made up their minds, but we have chosen not to speak about it, to survey people, because I think of the culture that we have here, people are typically hesitant about expressing their political choices.
Now, we're running a simple Twitter poll ourselves about whether you're undecided or not. At the moment, only 22% of you say that you're undecided. So we'll wait for this poll to roll on. It just came out. So participate in our Twitter poll. Now, we go back to Ben. Ben, we asked Ben if there's much difference between the last elections and this one with regard to undecided voters.
Well, I think there's a bit of undecidedness creeping in, perhaps. In this particular election, it's a multi-corner contest. And I think for some people who are used to just voting between Party A or Party B, suddenly are confronted with at least three major parties contesting and maybe some cases more. That's one situation. Another scenario is that they may have two persons from the same side, meaning, for example, two candidates from PAS. You know, one current PAS, another one ex-PAS in the Pakatan Harapan. So you might have people expressing some bewilderment at, you know, what choices do they have to make, because they essentially represent the same sets of values.
We also asked Ben what about the Mahathir factor, whether Mahathir's presence has made things even more complicated.
I think to some extent it adds to the calculativeness of voters. You know, there might be voters who typically may not be voting opposition, but because of Dr. Mahathir and his stature, they might rethink again. You will have people like that. Yeah, that adds to the complexity of making decisions in this particular election.
We also asked Ben if he's seen any effective measures taken by political parties to persuade fence-sitters.
Well, from the surveys that we are doing, tracking the effectiveness of campaign, we do notice that the level of campaign activity in this particular election is substantially lower than the 2013 election. There are some ceramahs here and there, but the level of activism is less the same period of time, 2013. I think number one, perhaps is the donor economy, like donors are not coming forward to support the opposition parties in a big way. Second, there is a kind of voter fatigue about election campaigns, even though the official campaign began only on April 28th. But we have literally been watching a campaign unfold for years now. This is merely, you know, the final few steps for the finishing line. there is a great deal of fatigue, not just from the voters, but also the parties themselves.
And finally, we asked Ben if he sees the possibility of large numbers of fence-sitters choosing not to vote and how much influence that would have on the outcome of the elections.
Well, I don't think so. I think a lot of people are going to show up to vote. I think the big question mark is by what margin and how large. Last election was an extraordinary one where 84% of people showed up to vote. I think this year we are going to see slightly less, perhaps 78 to 80% turnout. That in by itself is still fairly good. So some people may not show up on account that, you know, they think that they're not likely to see major change. And likewise, it's a middle of the week election. They might not make the trip back home to vote.
And that was Ben Sufian, Program Director at the independent pollster Merdeka Centre, with a look at undecided voters.
So this is interesting. You've got one think tank, Invoke, looking at, or a research outfit, Invoke, looking at the numbers and saying, well, there's quite a number of undecided voters at this point in time, a week or less than a week to polling day. And you have Ben Sufian, another research outfit from Merdeka Centre, saying, well, actually, their numbers are different, shows that it's a small percentage of people. What did Ben say, if I'm not mistaken, was 13 to 15% who
and
are
half,
still...
And half of that if you consider other responses,
correct,
right?
Yeah. But I think, as you mentioned, it really boils down to the type of question that you ask and whether people are admitting that they still are undecided. What is interesting, I would like to see, is of these undecided voters, what would make them decide from now until polling day? Are you talking about charamas? Are you talking about bad behaviour of political parties? Or is it just luck of the draw, toss a coin at the end? If it's a multi-cornered fight, you have to roll dice, don't you?
Yeah, because I personally think people would have made up their minds already. Remember yesterday we were talking about if you were to see a video and it tugs your heartstrings, would that cause you to change your mind when it comes to vote? Would it cause you to vote for that party and that made you cry or feel emotional? But I don't know, I feel that people have already made up their minds. I mean, these are statistics, yeah, but sure. But from who I've been talking to, everybody knows who they want to vote for, and yeah, they're just waiting for the day.
Maybe it's rural areas. Maybe it's the seats that are more hotly contested. Or, you know, Ben made a point that, you know, it could be a scenario where you have two candidates from the same side, two candidates from past, for instance, one current past, one ex-past, both representing your values, but who do you choose then?
Yeah, because now some people are also voting for Chalon, not parties. That's what we were talking about. So we're having that conversation a lot as well. So in my mind, I already know which Chalon that I'm going to vote for in a way. So it depends on the individual.
Yeah, tell us what you think is behind the mind of the undecided voter. We have a tweet from C.H. Fu, or Dr. Fu as we know him. He says, those who were going to vote for Bien now have second thoughts. So they're now undecided. So he says, I mean, of course, there'll be interpretations of the complete reverse in terms of dynamics. But who's to tell, right? So you tell us what you think. Participate in our poll and tweet us at BFM Radio. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We'll be back with more news and analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.